70 A.D. So that is when it was written, because it appears that as you read through the book, it's got all the Jewish stuff you know is in place. The temple, they're talking about the Holy of Holies, and they're talking about the worship, and they're talking about the priests. And all that seems to be going on at the time, which after the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D., a lot of that shut down. It definitely shut down in Jerusalem, and a lot of it shut down all over the world then, because there was just, you know, it just kind of came to a pretty much of a close in sense of a big picture. So it was probably written before the destruction of Jerusalem. In all probability, it was before 70 A.D. What was going on was the Christians who had been Jews and they became Christians, things were starting to get tough. In about 60 A.D., after the death, 60 years after the death of Jesus, the Roman government was taken over by Nero. Nero was a nut. He was just basically crazy. He murdered his mother. He killed a bunch of his relatives. He was very, besides crazy, what's that word when you always think people are persecuting you? Paranoid, yeah, that's the word. He was paranoid. And so he thought all these people were going to take over his kingdom, were trying to kill him, so he just basically killed everybody. Poisoned people, and he wanted to make Rome into this great empire, but it was kind of a shoddy little place at the time. You know, you got all these pictures of the gladiator. Well, it kind of really didn't look like that. Everybody knows that the gladiator pictures were computer generated, right? Everybody figure that out by now? Most of that was computer generated. Okay. It didn't really look that way. It was kind of a shoddy place. I mean, they had some temples and stuff, but it was just like a bunch of hovels and, you know, basically wood buildings. And so Nero thought, well, what a great way to rebuild the city. I'll just set it on fire. So he got somebody to set it on fire, and it pretty much burned down to the ground. And so they didn't know who to blame for it. And he said, I'm pretty sure the Christians did it. And so what they decided to do, there's this big persecution came up. And it was pretty much just against the Christians in Rome. It wasn't against Christians worldwide. It was just the Christians in Rome. And that was when, you know, he killed them all. He put them in the rings and he killed them with the lions. And they had the gladiators kill them. And he would actually put tar and pitch on the Christians. And he would have dinner parties and he would light them. And that's how he, you know, lit up his dinner parties at night, was with the Christians. And so that was what was going on. Well, the Hebrews, the Jewish Christians, are seeing all this, and they start thinking, maybe this wasn't such a good idea after all. Maybe I need to be a Jew again. And so the Hebrew writer, they find out this is coming on, and the Hebrew writer basically comes in and says, no, let's don't do that, and here's why. And so that's why the book of Hebrews is written. Let me tell you a couple things that will really help you study the book. One is, has everybody... Who all has been to the website and seen the quiet time we published out there? No one except me? Okay. That's great. I love it. Nobody raised their hand. Okay. If you go to the Central Gwinnett website, we have a quiet time published out there on the book of Hebrews. And you can just go out there and print it. Will do. There you go. There's a couple of them out there. One of them is an introduction with some basic stuff. You can copy that if you want to, but you really, really want to copy down the quiet time. It's entitled The Magical Quality, Perseverance in Hebrews. The Magical Quality, Perseverance in Hebrews. It's basically a 13-day study. Really a little bit more than that because you're having to read a chapter a day. But I think you'll really like that. So you ought to go out there and copy that. And use that because it really is kind of a cool thing. About 6 years ago, somebody, it was a sermon or something, somebody said, you ought to find a book of the Bible and make it your own. And I decided to do that. I decided to find a book of the Bible that I just wanted to study and make my own. And that book was the book of Hebrews. And for a year and a half, that's all I studied in my quiet times. And in my own personal Bible study. I studied nothing else for a year and a half. I wrote notes. I wrote a commentary for me. J.P. Tynes and I even talked about the possibility of publishing a commentary together Although we never did that, we never will do it, but it was kind of a cool idea at the time. And so I was trying to think of a title for the book of this commentary that I would like to publish one day. And I was riding home on an airplane one night from Orlando, Florida, and it was one of the big airplanes, so they had the big screens up and they were, you know, flashing signs up there. And there was this quote, and it was this. Patience and perseverance have magical qualities through which difficulties disappear. And it was by John Quincy Adams, President of the United States, 34th President, I believe. Patience and perseverance have magical qualities through which difficulties disappear. Now, I thought that was put up there just for me, because I have a title for this book. And the book of Hebrews, I think, is about the magical quality of perseverance. The magical quality of perseverance. It appears that if you have that magical quality in your life, you will endure life and come out on the other side of it a very, very happy person. We've seen a lot of people who had talent, who had skill, who had ability, but they had no perseverance. We've seen people who had less skill, less talent, less ability, and they had perseverance, and they were highly successful people. Whether it was in the field of athletics, in the field of education, in the field of politics, whatever it might be, people we've seen on our own business, that they were less talented, but they just held on. They just persevered to the end. And they were highly successful and won. And that's really what I think it's like being a Christian. Being a Christian is not going to be at the end of your life. They're going to have this glorious parade, and you're at the front, and they're going to list all the wonderful things you did. It's probably you're going to get into heaven, and God's going to say, "There's Phil Dawson." And someone will say, "What did he do?" He'll say, "Well, he mainly just held on." But you know, if you get to heaven, who cares? Right? I had a minister, a friend, Rick Mall, used to be a minister here. He said, "I do not care if I'm the last person in heaven and it hits me, the door hits my butt on the way in." He said, "I do not care. It doesn't matter." And that's what the book of Hebrews is about. It's just about holding on. Now let me give you a couple of quick outlines and a couple of things to look up in your study, and then we're going to talk about chapters 1 and 2. There's basically, the book of Hebrews is basically broken up into three parts. And just write these down. Chapters 1 through chapter 4 and verse 13 is the preeminence of Jesus. Chapter 1 and verse 1 through chapter 4 and verse 13 is the preeminence of Jesus. Jesus is preeminent. He's superior. Chapter 4 and verse 14 through chapter 10 and verse 18 is the permanency of Jesus. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Jesus is permanent. Chapter 4 and verse 14 through chapter 10 and verse 18. And that's where all the stuff comes up about the law of Moses and the covenant and the temple worship and all that sort of stuff comes up in those six chapters. But what he's also telling you there, the priesthood, he's saying Jesus is permanent, but these things are passing away. Chapter 10 and verse 19 through chapter 13 and verse 25, which is the end of the book, is the perseverance of Jesus. The perseverance of Jesus. So the preeminence of Jesus, the permanency of Jesus, and the perseverance of Jesus. So what's the whole book about? It's about Jesus. If you hold on the way Jesus held on, chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, you get to go to heaven too. You just got to hold on. You just don't quit. That's the deal. You don't have to do anything glorious. You don't have to do anything spectacular. You don't have to have your name printed anywhere. Just hold on. And you get to go to heaven. Here's some special words to look up during your study. Sacrifice. Sacrifice. Persevere. Faith. Better. B-E-T-T-E-R. And the phrase, let us. Not let us. All the old old-time preacher books, they'd preach their sermons. They'd always have one sermon, at least they're on the lettuce of the Bible, and they'd spell it L-E-T-T-U-C-E. And it was always a sermon about let us, which I always thought was kind of goofy, but anyway. So the word, the phrase let us, that's found in there quite a bit. The word better, we talked about that. And the warnings. There are some major warnings in the book of Hebrews where they'll say, there's a warning, or I warn you, or so forth. So look up that word. And finally, and you just need to write this down as you're going through the book. This is just for you to figure out. I came up with 32 reasons why people do not persevere. See how many you can come up with. 32 reasons why people do not persevere. See how many of those you can come up with, and we'll read those at the very end of the class, see if we all came up with the same list. But basically, there's 30-something reasons why people quit. We always think people quit because somebody else hurt their feelings, don't we? Say, well, why did so-and-so quit coming to church? Well, they got discouraged because somebody said something about it. Or sometimes we'll say it's a sin, and we always think it's one of those two things. Somebody hurt their feelings, or they fell into sin, and that's why they quit. There's about 30 other reasons as to why people quit. And hopefully we'll give you those reasons, and you can check those off and say, no, I don't do that, I don't do that, and you won't quit. Okay? All right, let's go to chapter 1 and chapter 2. So we're going to do this in the next 15 minutes. And the first thing we want to talk about, chapters 1 through chapter 3, talk about the preeminence of Jesus over the prophets, the preeminence of Jesus over angels, the preeminence of Jesus over Moses. And what we're going to talk about in chapter 1 and chapter 2 today is a little bit of piece about the prophets and about the preeminence of Jesus over angels. Chapter 1, starting verse 1. The past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, He has spoken to us by His Son, whom He appointed heir of all things, and through whom He made the universe. Jesus was just not one of the prophets. Jesus was not just a great prophet among other great prophets. He wasn't a major prophet among minor prophets. Jesus is superior over the prophets. There's no prophet that compares to Jesus. And that's why he says this here, just he didn't give it much attention. He's just wanting you to know, if you think Jesus is just another prophet, because what did the Jews base a lot of their faith in? The prophets. They quoted Jeremiah, Ezekiel. Remember they always saying, are you Jeremiah, Ezekiel, or one of the prophets? And so these guys think about going back to that and go. God says, let me just say at the beginning, Jesus is superior over the prophets. If you go back to one of those prophets, those are truly minor prophets in comparison to him. Any religion that bases its prophet greater than Jesus is a false religion. Any religion. If you think Allah is equitable to Jesus, you are wrong. If you think Muhammad is equitable to Jesus, not Allah, Muhammad, you are wrong. Jesus is the one and only prophet of God. And he's a prophet of God. He's the one and only one because he's the Son of God. He's just not another great prophet. So he just kind of says, don't go back to the prophets because you've got the prophet here. Seek him. Then he drops and he talks about angels. And it's kind of weird. You'd think, why is he talking about angels? Because they had all their faith in prophets. At that time, there was a spiritual vacuum in the world. Sound familiar? Because there is this big spiritual vacuum in the world, people were looking for something to help them feel good spiritually. And so what they started doing was getting very involved in thinking about, wondering about, making little cherub figurines and Hallmark cards. No, they didn't do that. I was kidding. But they were just infatuated with angels. Does that sound familiar to you? Our society has a spiritual vacuum. And so what a lot of people have done, and I'm not sure why, but they have basically filled that up with a lot of thinking about angels. Highway to Heaven. It was a story about angels. Touched by a Miracle. What was that about? It's about angels. Anybody remember that program? It was on? One of the highest rating programs in United States history when it was on. Touched by an angel. It was angels. You go to any Hallmark gift shop, you have tons of cards about angels. They sell little cherubs. Those little fat babies with little wings. How those wings hold up those little fat babies, I've never figured out. But it's about angels. Now, you say, well, I have those. It's all right. Don't worship them. It's okay. You're not doing anything wrong. You guys got to clarify that because you talk about angels and Oprah and people get mad at you. Don't bring that up, brother. But you know what? There's a spiritual vacuum, and that's why people are infatuated with angels. Because there's a spiritual vacuum, but people won't go all the way to Jesus. And so they get something spiritual in their life, and they talk about it, and that's what these guys were doing. And what he came along and says here, he says Jesus is preeminent over the angels. Here's why he's preeminent over the angels. Verse 3 through verse 14. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of His being, sustaining all things by His powerful Word. After He provided purification for sins, He sat right down at the hand of the Majesty in heaven. So He became as much superior to the angels as the name He has inherited is superior to theirs. Here's why. Because of His superior relationship with God. Listen to this. Which of the father angels did God ever say, "You're my Son, today I've become your Father"? Which of the angels did God ever say, "I'll be His Father and He will be my Son"? When God brings His firstborn, the Son, He says, "Let all the angels worship Him." Speaking of the angels, He said, He made His angels winds, His servants flames of fire. You'll skip over to verse 14. Are not all angels ministering servants sent to serve those who inherit salvation? Angels are servants. Now, I believe in angels. I believe in them with all my heart. I personally believe I have come in contact with two angels in my life. Now you may think, well, that's a little screwy. Well, it might be. I've been accused of being screwy by better people than you before. Sure, it's a little good. I really believe that happened. And some of you probably have had the same experience. You thought, I think that was an angel. I mean, Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 1, it says that, and I believe it. But I'm not going to worship them. I'm not going to get my spiritual high from that. I'm not going to get being fed spiritually by that because they are ministering servants to me. I am a ministering servant to Jesus. Back in verse 8. But about the Son, He says, "Your throne, O God, will last forever." God says this to Jesus. "Your throne, O God, will last forever. Righteousness will be the scepter of your kingdom. You have loved righteousness, hated wickedness. Therefore, God, your God, has set you above your companions by anointing you with oil." Then he goes on in verses 10 and 11. He says that Jesus is the Creator. So he just makes this big argument again and again. Jesus is superior to the angels because Jesus has a superior relationship to God. If you look back in verse 3, "The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of His being." Jesus is God. I hate it when people say, "Oh, I don't believe Jesus is God. Jesus was a great prophet. Jesus was a great moral teacher. Jesus was a great leader." No, He was not. He's either God or He is a nut. He is a lying, crazy man if He's not the Son of God. Don't put that up there. Don't denigrate Him like that. He is or He isn't. He is the way, the truth, and the life, or He is a liar. And we need to, when people say that, we need to stand up and say, no, 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 that's not true. And I don't believe it. We do not need to put Jesus on the same level as prophets or angels. He is the exact representation of God. You say, what is God like? Look at Jesus. Some little kid said, Jesus is just God with skin on Him. That's Him. Jesus is just God. Well, God's different than Jesus. No, He's not. Because God ain't different than God. You ain't different than you. Is this clear? Okay. Jesus is the superior relationship with God. Number two, Jesus has a superior relationship. His message is superior. Look in chapter 2 and verse 1. We must pay more careful attention, therefore, to what we have heard so that we do not drift away. There He brings it up. What the whole thing's about. For the message spoken by angels is binding, and every violation and disobedience received its just punishment. How shall we escape if we ignore such a great salvation? This salvation, which was first announced by the Lord, was confirmed to us by those who heard it. God also testified by signs, wonders, miracles, gifts of the Holy Spirit distributed according to His will. Jesus has a superior message in angels. Angels came and did stuff like this. Don't go to Egypt, Joseph. Gideon, what are you doing out here in the threshing floor? Lot, come inside, or those homosexual men are going to attack you. Abram, we're going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what angels said. And He says, if that message is great, how can you neglect the great salvation which was spoken by Jesus? The message of Jesus is superior to the message of angels. They're just ministering servants. So, although they look cute on Hallmark cards, and they do, their message is not superior to Jesus' message. So don't treat it that way. Number three, Jesus has a superior relationship with man. That's why He is superior to the angels. Start in verse 5 of chapter 2. And we're going to read the end of the chapter. We'll say a couple things and we'll close. It is not to angels that He has subjected the world to come about which we are speaking. But there is a place where someone has testified. What is man that you are mindful of him? The Son of Man that you care for him? You made him a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor. Put everything under his feet. Putting everything under his feet, God left nothing that is not subject to him. He's talking about you and me. Yet at the present, we do not see everything subject to him. But we see Jesus. Remember that phrase. But we see Jesus comes up over and over again in the book of Hebrews. Look to Jesus. We see Jesus. Look here. Think about Him. Who was made a little lower than the angels? Who else was made a little bit lower than the angels? We were. Jesus was made a little lower than the angels too. Because His relationship with us is superior to angels. And here's why. Now crowned with glory and honor because He suffered death, so that by the grace of God He might taste death for everyone. Here's one reason Jesus' relationship with us is superior to the angels, because He tasted death for us. Angels didn't taste death for anybody. You never hear of an angel dying. You never hear of an angel being killed. You never hear of an angel sacrificing himself for other people. They didn't do that. Jesus did. In bringing me and the sons to glory, it was fitting that God, for and through whom everything exists, should make the offer of their salvation perfect through suffering. But the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. Another thing about Jesus' relationship with man is that He came to make us holy. That's why Jesus died, is so you and I could be holy. Not so we'd be better. You realize that? It's just not so you'd be a better person. You know, I think it's good when we talk about how much better we are because of Jesus and what happened to our lives. I think we ought to talk about that. But I think we ought to talk about the fact that, well, you know what, I'm also holy now. Now, we're kind of uncomfortable saying that because it sounds, in our society, you know, oh, you're not supposed to say you're holy. But you are holy. Holy just means you're set apart. That's all it means. You're holy now. You're not better. You are better, hopefully. But you're holy. You're a holy person. Angels didn't do that for people. Jesus did. Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. He says, I will declare your name to my brothers. In the presence of the congregation, I will sing your praises. Again, I will put my trust in Him. And again, He says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, He too shared in their humanity. so that by his death he might destroy him who holds the power of the devil, death, that is the devil. I love verse 15. And free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. That is one of my favorite verses in all the Bible. I just cold chills every time I read that. Free all those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For this reason he had to be made like his brothers in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted. And finally, Jesus' message is superior because he shared in our humanity. When you think about angels, you think about them doing all this cool stuff, they're flying around. How many of y'all saw that movie, Michael? Sorry, John Travolta? Now, there's some things about that you really don't want to like, but I really like that movie. Because it kind of gives you a flavor of what an angel might have been like, fighting battles and doing this and making all these cool things happen. But angels never shared in our humanity. They never came down and said, I'll die for you. And Jesus did. And that's why Jesus is superior. So, Jesus is superior because of his relationship with God, because his message is superior, and because he shared in our humanity. His relationship with us is superior. Next week we'll read Hebrews chapter 3. We're going to talk about the preeminence of Jesus over Moses. Now someone has asked, they said, what's the best way to prepare for the class? Here's the best way to prepare for the class. Week number one, that's this week, read the book of Hebrews all the way through. Okay? Now here's what I want you to do week number two. Read the book of Hebrews all the way through. Week number three, we're going to do something different. You're going to read the book of Hebrews from beginning to end. If you will read the book of Hebrews, and it'll be a challenge, I know. If you read the book of Hebrews from the amount of classes we have, beginning to end every week, you will really learn a ton, and it will really become part of your life. Thank you for coming today, and go get your children. Yeah.